Hello and welcome to the Chiron portion of the 2021 Aries reading. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer, once again for the next hour, here to talk about a little more in-depth specific topic, which is what is Chiron, what are its transits about, and what is the Chiron return. My intent is to speak to people who are immediately after, at, or approaching their 50th birthday. Chiron was in Aries from parts of 1968 clear through parts of 1977, when it was finally discovered in November of 1977 after it had moved into Taurus. A lot of people out there are born with Chiron in Aries, and this is an unusual and special placement because it focuses one of the, you know, genuinely most significant signs of the zodiac. I mean, you can't really say that some signs are important and some signs are not more so important, but Aries, you have to make extra room for it. Sagittarius is one of those signs as well, owing to it containing the galactic center and the great attractor. These special distinctions can only be given for specific purposes and where deserved. And Aries definitely deserves it because it is essentially the key that turns the ignition of the cosmos. It is the sign of initiative. It is the sign of, you might say, the birth of self-consciousness. And Chiron, again discovered in 1977, has this kind of portable self-awareness quality that it brings wherever it goes, and can focus quite a bit of thought and concentrate activity in ways that do not always earn it a positive reputation. One of the reasons that Chiron is not always perceived as a positive influence is because of how much difficulty there can be when it's information, things it's calling on you to do, are ignored. And then even when you are someone who does your work and, you know, takes care of yourself and goes to therapy and does all that, a transit like the Chiron return, which happens, I would say, broadly speaking, between ages 49 and 51, can be very difficult. It can be very challenging. And so these and other transits I'll get into in a moment, don't get Chiron favorable rating from most people. And then also the intensity and depth of the subject matter and how often a physical ailment can be involved make it not something that people generally go toward willingly. But the thing is, if you go toward it willingly, you learn a lot, and you learn a lot about yourself, and you can find a new delineation of your life by seeking an understanding of Chiron, and you can get something, I think, deeper than insight into the strange kinds of sequences of events that can come out of the lifetime of Chiron transits. So one of the things that you may know if you've worked with me as an astrology client is that I think, unlike most people working with Chiron, I certainly use the natal placement, but I always use the natal placement as exactly one half of an equation with the transits to that natal placement. And the transits are fairly easy to spot. I'm going to go through a few of them in broad terms. It's going to be I'll give a range of years rather than a specific year. If I have your natal chart, I can give a specific year. But the transits really tell the story, and it's not just transits to Chiron. You know, in other words, the angles it makes to itself. Like, for example, if you're born 1970, you would have you'd have your first major Chiron transit at around age 20-ish. If you're born in 1995, you'll have your first similar transit. excuse me. Still getting over a cold at about age 7. So one of the interesting things about Chiron is that our parents have had very different transit patterns. Parents tend to be about 25 years older than their kids, maybe a little more these days with baby boomers having had kids so late in life. No matter what, if you're a generation apart, you're going to have a whole different set of Chiron transits at different ages than your parents or your kids. And so this is partly indicative of a generation gap when it comes to spiritual evolution and growth process, and is also one indication of why it is that grandparents are in certain ways closer to grandchildren than parents are to the children, and that is because grandparents tend to be about 50 years older than the grandkids, and so are on a similar Chiron trajectory. You know, for example, our generation, you know, I'm born in the mid-60s, so Chiron and mid-Pisces, Chiron moving very slowly, is a very different kind of growth process, having a transit in our early 20s that a 7-year-old would have, that being the Chiron first square. So that all said, what Chiron does is it places an emphasis in your chart. And one of my theories of Aries is that in any astrological context, mainly a personal context, so not so much a, you know, an event or political context or, you know, but a natal chart, Aries is where we seek an experience of ourselves. It is where we seek to become. So if you have Aries in the 11th, you're likely to seek your identity and your sense of becoming in a semi-public environment, surrounded by people out in the open. If you have Chiron in the 12th, Aries in the 12th, you're much more likely to, as do many people with a strong Taurus chart, seek your reality inwardly and not be so open to expressing your reality. So you could go all around the wheel, and I do this in many of my readings, which is one reason why it's worth listening to readings other than your sign to hear my take on how the chart works for other signs. When you put Chiron into Aries, it's going to really, really ramp up and drive up the energy surrounding this self-quest, this quest to become oneself. And this creates charisma. It can create people who are very intense. It can create those that David Byrne writes about in the song, them slippery people. It can create all kinds of attention focused on oneself that is not necessarily wanted, but it also is descriptive of a spiritual process that is going to be driven by self-actualization. And I think that is one of the most important concepts associated with Chiron, and in particular Chiron in Aries. And though the self-actualization movement was going strong in many ways in the 1960s, under the influence of Chiron in Pisces, a distinctly spiritual influence, Chiron in Aries gets the self-actualization movement going and human potential movement going very high intensity and velocity, and the books keep coming out, and the therapy methods keep evolving and developing, and the teachers keep emerging, and there is a quest for self-understanding in the era of Chiron in Aries that we have yet to see matched in any way, before or since, I would say. And those born with Chiron in Aries are carrying this with them as a kind of embodied reality that is like your own portable 1970s encounter group, basically. And there is something that feels good about being nakedly yourself, although the culture has put a lot of pressure on people to conceal their reality and to not seek their reality. And there are really no more group therapy groups. This has all been replaced by things that are, much less interesting than, true encounter groups. And in much of the self-actualization process has just sort of faded into memory, and now can be purchased for $3 in it a books, or for 99 cents or a penny on Amazon. And now with Chiron back in Aries, everybody with Chiron in Aries is getting this instinct, this impulse sparked up, and the quest is being reignited. And I think that we have yet to see a positive cultural manifestation of this. One of the things that we saw at the beginning of Chiron in Aries in 68 and in the first few years was the birth of identity politics and what had been first a unified civil rights movement, followed by a unified anti-war movement, starts to fragment as Chiron in Aries gets underway, and it fragments into many, many smaller movements, including the New Age movement representing spirituality, the Black Power movement, and other racially oriented movements, of course, without any real leadership, since Malcolm and Dr. King were assassinated. Just and Dr. King in particular, right as Chiron was entering Aries, and then there is the environmental movement, and there's the women's movement, and the even more radical women's movement, and the gay rights movement, which is born out of Stonewall, and suddenly Chiron in Aries' time is about all of these separately functioning and at times barely talking different social movements, which all would seem to have the same intent, but are doing it often in very different and exclusionary ways. And so this is one of the kind of caveats about Chiron in Aries. And as Chiron was transitioning back into Aries one cycle later in 2018, we saw new eruptions of identity politics and new eruptions of what is being made to pass for feminism, and a lot of just I'm in my movement and you are in your movement, quite in contrast to the eras of Chiron in Pisces when this just was a little bit less sharp. Although I have to say, you know, in the 20-teens, it wasn't as good as the 1960s. Chiron in Pisces was definitely not as mellow and as peace and love. And now we are left with healing fragmentation that is both internal, personal fragmentation, and cultural fragmentation. So in looking at any natal chart factor, it does help to have your birth time so we can place the house of the thing in question correctly. We can, in the readings that I do, such as the Aries birthday reading, I'm using the houses of the sun because I'm working with people whose birth time I don't have. But if you cast your chart with your time, it will help to know what house Aries, and therefore Chiron, assuming you have Chiron in Aries, is in your chart. The house placement is important because it talks about the dominant field of experience of life where you are going to experience the planet. And so even if you have Chiron in Aries, it's going to be very different in the third house than it's going to be in the seventh house. And in the third house, it's going to be experienced in many ways as a mental phenomenon and as something that you experience through your siblings in your local community versus having it in your seventh house where you are likely to experience it in a very direct and immediate way in your long-term relationships. So you can do that. You can write to us, or you can go to astro.com or a number of other websites that cast it. And as long as you put in your accurate birth time and make sure you get the time zone right, you know, that's the thing to check, is just to make sure that if you're born during daylight time, the chart's cast during daylight time, for example, and that you don't guess your time, that you look it up. But let's talk about a couple of times in your life when there were important transits for you. Let's see. Now, these are not the only ones. They are a few of them. And so Chiron is in Aries again from 68 to 77. Now, it is possible that early in life you had Chiron conjunct the sun. So to do this, you want to find out the degree of your sun and the degree of your Chiron, and then you either talk to an astrologer, write to us, or look at this ephemeris and get an approximate concept of when Chiron was conjunct your sun. The same is true if you have the moon in Aries. Now, the next major transition point of Chiron for those who have it in Aries is when Chiron goes into the cardinal sign Cancer. And so one thing that it's important to look at with Chiron transits is the quadrature alignments, that is to say the square to the natal position, the opposition to the natal position, the second square to the natal position, and the return or conjunction to the natal position, which if you're about age 50, you are having now. And so there is a window of time between 1988, really early 1988, February, and mid-1991 when Chiron was in Cancer. And at that time, you had your Chiron first square, and you had your Chiron first square at about age 20 or, well, 20 through 21. Yeah, 88 through 91, whatever age that turns out to be, a little older than 20, probably 22 or 23. So very early 20s, everyone with Chiron in Aries had their first Chiron square. And as I mentioned, there our parents had their first Chiron square at about age 7. That is a whole other story to have this transit. So remember what your life was like. The older you are, the earlier in this 88 through 91 window you're going to have it in. But somewhere in there, you'll be able to describe events that can contain the kind of reconfiguring of your reality. A lot of growing up, a lot of catching up taking place at the first Chiron square. The second major transit is the Chiron opposition, and that is when Chiron was in Libra. Chiron was in Libra from October 95 through June 1997, with a brief dip into Scorpio in 97, but for practical purposes, we're looking at an approximately 18-month period from late 95 out through mid-97. And Chiron moves at its quickest through Libra, of all the signs, moves its slowest through Aries, takes 9 years to go through Aries, takes 18 months to go through Libra. And so in that 18-month phase, everyone with Chiron in Aries had their Chiron opposition, which is synchronous with, perhaps a little bit ahead of, the Saturn return. So for people born in the 60s and 70s, the Chiron opposition and the Saturn return are happening around the same time. Based on your birth year, you'll know how old you were between 95 and 97. It's looking to me like people in this cohort had their Chiron opposition before their Saturn return, so it's kind of a warm up to the Saturn return, kind of an extreme awakening. And the Saturn return almost always comes with a reorientation in relationships, and no doubt having Chiron both opposite your natal Chiron and your natal Sun, possibly natal opposite your rising sign, and then in Libra, is some, you know, major development or coming out. By the way, the tool that I'm using is the first one on the resources page. It's the Chiron 90-Day Ephemeris 1968 to present. If you'd like a better ephemeris, I can link to a more detailed month-by-month ephemeris, but for our purposes here, the 90-Day Ephemeris will do just fine because it catches Chiron in every sign. Okay, next is around the turn of the millennium. Chiron actually enters Capricorn for the first time in November 2001. We missed that with the 3 month ephemeris because I'm only giving the position every 90 days. But right after 9/11, Chiron entered Capricorn, and then it stayed in Capricorn through 2005. That's a 4-year phase. So again, for this you want to know the degree of your Chiron, basically, and see when the degree from Capricorn matches the degree of your Chiron from Aries. If you're Aries Sun, it's also going to make a square to your Sun. Okay, now before we get to the Chiron return, which again happens, I think, you know, generally between 49 and 51 or 52, though it can drag on for a while, if you know your rising sign, look for when Chiron was in your rising sign. Now you're going to look at this ephemeris, you're going to see a range, a long range. Say, for example, you're Taurus rising, that's 77 through well, 76, stretching all the way through the early 1980s, you're going to want to know a little bit more about the degree of your ascendant and when Chiron was in you know, close to your degree rising. Again, this is very easy information to find out, and you're just matching the number. When you get your natal chart back, your natal chart's going to have a degree on the left. It's going to say, you know, you'll see that your ascendant, for example, is in Taurus, and you're going to see a number, a bigger number, and you know, a number between 1 and 30, 1 and 29, which is your degree, and then another number between 1 and 59, which is your minute. Just use the big number, match it up to this ephemeris, and you will see when Chiron passed through your rising sign. And this is a very easy way to do advanced astrology. And the reason it's advanced astrology is you're looking up a transit that for most people is a really deep transit, which is a transit of Chiron to Chiron, or a transit of Chiron to something as important as your ascendant. There are other transits that, you know, you can learn. You can listen to one of my Chiron classes. You can take my Chiron class coming up later in the year. But the ones that are already done, that are in the archives, they're available in little bundles of, you know, steeply discounted groups or the whole thing. You will see that it is pretty easy to get genuine in-depth results out of astrology by doing this. And this is a technique that many astrologers don't use, but would be very wise to use, because my take, after having listened to the Chiron transits of, you know, somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 clients over the years, I have seen that these transits give a pattern. They present a kind of a hidden plot in the story. They reveal something that was going on in terms of events that were connected, but you didn't see the connection. And then suddenly, when you get a look at these Chiron transits, you can see the connection. If you'd like, I can just work up the transits for you for a modest fee. This is included with every reading that I do, if I think it's necessary, and especially if the client wants it. But it is a very good way to get to understand your chart, not by looking at the planets as particles sitting in one place, but as waveforms that are transiting around the wheel. You need that dynamic experience of the planet as a thing in motion to be able to track it as it goes through your life, and to understand a version of your biography that can be somewhat different from the one that you think that you live. Now, it is worth noting with these Chiron transits is that they may not seem to be related. They may not seem to be positive developments, but there is a relationship between all of them, because they all represent transits to your natal Chiron placement. And then there is a connection to, something much deeper that is going on in your life. Now we get to the Chiron return. The Chiron return is what happens when Chiron comes back to its natal position. Chiron has an orbit that is approximately 50.7 years. So it's from something like 50 years and 8 or 9 months. This is almost always a time of radical transformation for people. And these squares and oppositions and transits to the first house, transits to the moon, transits to the sun, all easy to find, can also be quite radical transformations. But the Chiron return is pretty much the grandma of them all, and and is the one where basically the whole story comes to closure and comes to completion, and a whole new cycle of your life is completed. I consider the Chiron return to be the last of the midlife transits and the first of the transits as someone approaches elderhood, or their, you know, takes up fully their mantle as a teacher. Many people are becoming grandparents at around this age, and there is a if this transit is handled well, there is a claiming of maturity and a claiming of one's role in the world, and maybe some corresponding freedom with that. Although for those who are on a deep spiritual path, a path of teaching, a path of service, there's probably not going to be too much in the way of letting up with the Chiron return, although there will be a shift of how, there can be a shift of how you express your sense of mission and express your responsibilities, right? So this is, you know, the mode of expression changes, and I think you'll see that as you go through these transits, the seemingly shocking or difficult or challenging things that occur during these transit events all contribute to your awakening. They all represent a point of no return. While I'm on the topic of these transits, I would include in them, in the Chiron series, I would definitely plot the Saturn return at around age 29, age 30, and I would plot the Uranian opposition at approximately age 42. Those are transits that don't change in terms of the orbits are not elliptical or as elliptical as that of Chiron. So pretty much everyone has to have their Saturn return at 29 if they make it that long, and their Uranian opposition at around 42, 43 if they make it that long, because these are both large, you know, planets very well settled in their orbits, and transits of Saturn count a lot in the Chiron cycle, and transits of Uranus count a lot in the Chiron cycle, and this involves the orbit of Chiron basically piercing the orbits of both Saturn and Uranus. And so in many ways, Saturn, Chiron can be understood in a kind of a simple way as a translator between the raw energy, the inventive and electrical and revolutionary and rebellious energy of Uranus, and the more grounding, stable chronological movement of Saturn. Chiron can, you know, ground the lightning of Uranus into Saturn, and it can allow some of the grounding of Saturn into the less predictable and erratic qualities of Uranus. Okay, in this third and last segment, I'd like to look at this chart that I've included for a sample Chiron return. It takes place in 1971, so a lot of people born in that era, of course, are having your Chiron return right now. And to create the date for this chart, I used the middle conjunction, the retrograde conjunction of Uranus, Chiron and Eris, which was one of those truly landmark moments in the early 1970s that I think defined many things that that presaged the decade to come. And I have used the geographic center location of the United States, Belle Fourche, South Dakota. I've never been there, but I figured there must be a geographic center of the United States, so I just picked the dead center of the United States. For the purpose of whatever country you might be in, whatever state you might be in, for the purpose of understanding planetary dynamics, the place doesn't matter so much, but let's just use this chart as an example chart to give you a concept of, you know, what it's like to look at a chart and what was going on in the era of your birth, if you're born in 1971 and into 1972 when this transit continues. And so for those born ahead of this, there's going to be some differences. For some born after, there's going to be some differences. But again, this is mainly an example chart. And I begin with the conjunction of Chiron and Eris. Neither was discovered at the time. Chiron's not discovered till 1977. Astrologers don't pick up on it until maybe around 1980 or so. And Eris is not discovered until 2005 and named in 2006. And so there's this conjunction going on that is every bit as powerful as the Uranus-Pluto conjunction of 64, 5, and 6, except that people knew the Uranus-Pluto conjunction was going on. Seems like the only person who was talking about the Uranus-Pluto conjunction at that time was, of course, Dane Rudyard, talking about, you know, in the early 60s, predicting massive student uprisings, and he kind of got it right, basically, because he was Dane Rudyard. And yet at that time in the ephemerides published in that era did not list Pluto in the longitude tables. I've got on my desk here, where is it, right on my chair, a 1960 through 69 Rosicrucian, I think. What was it? Yeah, Rosicrucian ephemeris. Position of Pluto is well known, and it's not listed on the longitude tables, and so astrology takes a long time to catch up with new advances, and now is in many ways in full-on retro mode. But when we look back at this time frame of 71-72, it is clear that something is brewing here. I mean, Kent State happens in May of 70. That was an absolutely huge time, warming up to this time, and then in the early 70s, you know, we start to get things like Earth Day. The first Earth Day, I think, was in 71. Let's see. First Earth Day. Nope, April 22nd, 1970. So here's some examples of the zeitgeist being of like special purpose, special interest movements instead of one big one. My take on the conjunction of Chiron and Eris is that it is the main thing lending credibility to second wave feminism of that era. As many people know, I'm not the world's biggest fan of second wave feminism. I think that it was too influenced by the CIA, too influenced by money, too influenced by glamour, and not nearly deeply concerned enough with the single most important thing that could possibly ever be relevant to feminism, which is relationships, how people have their relationships. That was never tackled. Much unfinished business left behind But I think that inside the whole thing, deep in there was a thread of integrity, and you see this come through certain thinkers of that era. I think most particularly Adrian Rich, I think, was one of the most intellectually grounded, intellectually grounded second wave feminists, really genuinely a scholar, poet, and philosopher. And the book I'm thinking of is called Diving into the Wreck. Diving into the Wreck was a poem, and it's from this era, poems from 1971 through 72. So Diving into the Wreck, absolutely magnificent poem, is published in this era. Let's see, I've got the text in front of me. It's always very tempting to read it. I think I might have to do that. And so the thing, though, once we go beyond feminism to the impulse beneath it, is that there is this explosion of urgency around self-discovery. And you can see this in Rich's work. She, for being first of all the first woman to win the National Book Award, so she, made an impression on all of literate society, and literate society really needed it and needed her to provide a viewpoint with which you may not agree, but the integrity of this is, I think, difficult to argue with. Additionally, in this era, Uranus has long since moved into Libra. And so it's a different version of the 60s than Uranus and Pluto in Virgo, right, which is the heart of the 60s. That's the Beatles arriving in New York, and Bob Dylan, a little bit ahead of that, Bob Dylan arriving, and what we think of as the 1960s, Kennedy assassination, and the early Vietnam War, the early Vietnam War protests, 66, 67, pick your summer of love. That was all Uranus, Pluto in Virgo. But around the time of the Woodstock Festival, Uranus moves into Libra and Chiron moves into Aries. And so we've got this new manifestation of 1960s astrology with Pluto lingering behind in Virgo, and then Uranus and Chiron opposing one another. By the way, all of all charts of people born pretty much between the 50s and the 70s, even into the early 80s, but I think not so far into the 80s, have Chiron and Uranus in an opposition, because they're moving it around the same speed. They happen to be opposite one another. And I think I read in a Barbara Hand Cloud book, I haven't tested this, it's easy enough to verify, that there were 42 separate oppositions of Chiron and Uranus. Let's check that out and just make sure that's true. Okay, yeah, so the oppositions of Chiron and Uranus span from February 52 all the way through May of 89. So that is 27 years. And yeah, there's, looks like about 40 of them, of these two planets being opposite. So it is beyond generational. This spans many, many generations, and it is exact in the chart for Chiron conjunct Eris. Go back to that page. I got a lot of windows open. I finally found it. Okay, so now what else we see here? So Pluto, my point here largely is that Pluto's getting ready to change signs. And it changes signs in the early 70s. It looks like it's about two years ahead or a year ahead of entering Libra in the early 70s. And then by the time we have Uranus and Pluto in Libra both, then we are fully into the 1970s. So the way that these historical eras change is they don't change all at once. that like one foot goes into one ear, then the next foot follows, and then the next foot follows. So, for example, in 71, one thing that was very much ending about the 1960s was that one of the defining and lesser appreciated things defining the 1960s was Neptune in Scorpio. That was a lot of your transcendent sexuality. It was a lot of your drug stuff, entheogenic use of drugs going on. It was a lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. In many ways, if the 1960s have a sexy soul, that is Neptune in Scorpio. And so in the chart for the sample Chiron return, which is on the resources page, Neptune is in the first degree of Sagittarius. And with this, for example, we start to get a transition out of a sex movement and into a spiritual movement, which we call the New Age movement. There have been several iterations of the New Age movement, but the one we think of is the one that spans mostly the 70s through the early 1990s, maybe late 1980s. In this era, Saturn is in Gemini. Personally, I think that this is one of the best placements for Saturn. Saturn does very well in the air signs and is in many ways at its best in Gemini. It lightens the quality of Saturn and it gives it a double viewpoint. And there you go. You can look at Chiron. You can cast your chart and look at Chiron transits to all of these planets with like an hour of instruction, or you can just pay me to look them up and it'll take me 15-20 minutes to get it right. You will find that it is really interesting just to look at your natal chart, even if you don't know what it means, and then you slowly, one thing at a time, like one little thing at a time, you're like, oh, that's interesting. Oh, that planet's changing signs. I'm born in that era of that planet changing signs. So if you're having your Chiron return now, you're born in the era of Neptune changing signs. And so, I happen to love social history and the sensation, the feeling of what it's like to be alive in a certain time, particularly different phases near and around the time of my birth. I hope to pass this love of, what society felt like and what the main placements influencing the changes were, and tracing the changes through these outer planet planetary transits. Rick Levine does quite a bit of this in Cosmos and Psyche, but he never mentions an astrological sign in the book because he doesn't want to sound like he's too groovy. And I think that the astrological signs are, one of the most exciting things about astrology. I mean, Scorpio and Sag are right next to each other, but boy, what a difference. And then what an interesting gradient going on between them. So that's something of a reading of this sample Chiron return chart. Chiron is rising in this chart, which gives it extra prominence. It's also lurking around 2 degrees into the 12th, which gives it a kind of a transcendent feeling and a little more mysticism to it than it would be had this hypothetical person been born an hour ahead. But together, Chiron and Eris rising, is a lot of power and a lot of individual personal changes that a person's going through. One other thing, a lot to think about with this, but to have Chiron and Eris in a conjunction, which everyone basically born from like 70 through 72 has, though it's not going to be as close as this one, there'll still be a conjunction. Every Chiron transit you have to Chiron happens to Eris as well. And so this kind of quadruples the effect of both Chiron and Eris. And in this, you know, as I have you know, said many, many times, I think this is the thing that shows that there was some integrity to second wave feminism, and the thing that was the integrity to second wave feminism was this quest for personhood. And so underneath what is called feminism is this longing to be human, this longing to be alive. All right, so since we're in this perfect moment of practically looking at a chart for this poem, I will endeavor to read Diving into the Wreck by Adrienne Rich. And she says, first, having read The Book of Myths, and loaded the camera, and checked the edge of the knife blade, I put on the body armor of black rubber, the absurd flippers, the grave and awkward mask. I am having to do this not like Cousteau with his assiduous team aboard the sun-flooded schooner, but here alone. There's a ladder. There is a ladder. The ladder is always there, hanging innocently close to the side of the schooner. We know what it's for, we who have used it. Otherwise, it's a piece of maritime floss, some sundry equipment. I go down, rung after rung, and still the oxygen immerses me, the blue light, the clear atoms of our human air. I go down. My flippers cripple me. I crawl like an insect down the ladder. There is no one to tell me when the ocean will begin. First, the air is blue, and then it is bluer, and then green, and then black. I am blacking out, yet my mask is powerful. It pumps my blood with power. The sea is another story. The sea is not a question of power. I have to learn alone to turn my body without force in the deep element. I have to learn alone to turn my body without force in the deep element. And now it's easy to forget what I came for among so many who have always lived here, swaying their serenaded fans beneath the reefs, between the reefs, and besides, you breathe differently down here. I came to explore the wreck. The words are purposes. The words are maps. I came to see the damage that was done and the treasures that prevail. I stroke the beam of my lamp slowly along the flank of something more permanent than fish or weed. The thing I came for, the wreck, and not the story of the wreck, the thing itself, and not the myth. The drowned face staring toward the sun, the evidence of damage worn by salt and sway into this threadbare beauty. The ribs of disaster curving their assertion among the tentative haunters. This is the place. I am here. The mermaid whose dark hair streams black, the merman in his armored body. We circle silently about the wreck. We dive into the hold. I am she. I am he. Whose drowned face sleeps with open eyes, whose breasts still bear the stress, whose copper, silver, vermeil cargo lies obscurely inside barrels, half-wedged and left to rot. We are the half-destroyed instruments that once held to a course, the water-eaten log, the fouled compass. We are. I am. You are. By cowardice or courage, the one who find our way back to this scene, carrying a knife, a camera, a book of myths in which our names do not appear. Go, Adrienne. So that's a souvenir of the early 1970s and a souvenir of the conjunction of Chiron and Eris. And there you go. Maybe I'll catch you somewhere down the line of Chiron Studies. Write to me if you are interested. There's all kinds of stuff we can point you to, many different Chiron resource areas if you are interested. cs@planetwaves.net, and we will get back to you with more information. All right, thank you for your business. Thank you for your trust. Have an amazing transition into this next stage of your life as you experience your Chiron return. And I will catch you on a different day.